It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, another long weekend. I hope you had a nice one.
Atamari, Rachel. Yeah, it was good. I had a couple of Anzac Day ceremonies, one at the Cenotaph, so it was great to see that. I mean, it was, you know, there was a conservative approach taken, I think, by the veterans of not wanting it to be too big, but more than 1,000 people turned up anyway. And then I went through to Onehunga and did the RSA ceremony there, and there were close to 300 people, good cross-section of our population. And people were really glad to be back, you know, after 2 years of disruption with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
This is an important occasion when people remember those who sacrificed their lives for the country. And so it was nice. I ended up spending a few hours too many at the RSA, probably, just talking to people. But lovely occasion and good to mix with people again. And, yeah, I think we're all looking at getting back as much as we can, Omicron permitting, to a normal life.
Well, something that people may have got involved with over the long weekend is some reopening of tracks in the Waitakere's. Now, we've had many closures for the last few years because of Cody dieback, but it's exciting to see that several significant tracks were reopened in time for this long weekend. Now, what does that mean about where we're currently at with the Cody dieback problem? We haven't actually talked about this for a while. What's happening?
Yeah, well, as you probably remember, or you might not remember actually, in 2018, I put out for submission an enhanced natural environment targeted rate, and that enabled us to spend $100 million over 10 years in protecting kauri against the spread of the dieback disease. And one of the major projects there was the upgrading of tracks. Kauri dieback is spread largely through mud on people's boots, mm-hmm. and transferred from place to place. We haven't yet got it in the Hoonuas, and we're trying desperately to keep it out.
Mm.
So what we had to do, and it caused some controversy at the time, but we worked with the Te Kawaroa Māki, the local iwi, was to close the tracks and not reopen them until such time as they were upgraded to make sure that they would prevent the spread. So that largely means gravelling the tracks,
yep.
It means building boardwalks, it means sanitary stations going in and out of it. And with the three that we opened Friday morning, we just got it opened in time, and then we started walking up the track, and then it poured on us. the three tracks are the Gibbons, the Muir, and Pararaha tracks. That means you can walk all the way from Huia now down through Whatupu, and then up to Karikari, Piha, and beyond.
Mm.
The tracks we opened are about 5.5 kilometres long, but now we've reopened 103 of 190 kilometres of tracks. So significantly over half of the rate has been spent on upgrading those tracks, and we'll continue until we're finished upgrading them so that we again have access, but we can do so safely without spreading kauri dieback. Now, we have a report coming out later this year to determine how much further it has spread. So we're on tenterhooks a little bit about that. We just don't know. We're doing everything we can to stop it. And the government's got a program that draws in our work and other councils across the region. But what we don't want to see is the loss of our iconic tree, obviously.
I'm very interested to hear where the education around Cody dieback is at and the push for that. We saw, you know, a massive push in education about 3 years ago, which has continued to a sort of less intense extent. But we're getting a lot of international tourists, or projected a lot of international tourists, who will be returning over the coming months, and particularly next summer. Is there going to be any big, push to bring back some of that education that we have previously had in place?
Yeah, what we've done in previous years is put in ambassadors, track ambassadors, that greet you when you start on the main tracks, and just give you some advice about, you know, please keep to your tracks, don't wander off into the bush, because that puts the spread of the disease at risk. Making sure that people, you know, the sanitary stations are now pretty obvious. You can't really ignore them. You've got to walk through them, and making sure that people do the right thing. And, you know, I do it twice as hard because I live on the edge of the Hunua Ranges. And the last thing is I want to be responsible for is the transfer of that disease. So education's an important part of it.
So we will see a big ramping up in that leading into summer, you expect?
Yeah, particularly over the summer months when the tracks are most often used. But there's signage there. The stations are obvious. The tracks are good. And, I mean, the tracks are not only good at stopping the spread of the Kauri dieback disease, but they're much safer and they're much better to walk on now than the old tracks that were sometimes a bit rough in places, you know, so steps and boardwalks and, you know, making sure that the experience, it's still quite an innovating one, but is a pleasant experience for the tens of thousands of people who will use those tracks.
It's very good to hear that this is, you know, heading in such a positive direction. But let's talk a little bit about housing. We've touched on this a little bit in the last couple of weeks because we've seen new rules from the government about housing density, and we've been talking about how that's going to particularly affect Auckland, the ways that Auckland Council is looking at adapting the plan or the guidance from the government to make it practical. We have seen some interesting conversations in the last week, though, since the draft for housing density has been put out, particularly high-density housing around the centre of Tāmaki Makaurau and around city centres, I should say, in Auckland. And there's been some discussion about what happens when you've got a house that's been classified as a historical or a protection building, but it really is just a massive dump. What's going on there? Is there discussion and nuance around how to manage those things that fall on a map under a protection site, but perhaps in reality aren't actually worth saving? What's going on with that conversation?
Yeah, well, there's two categories. What's worth saving and what's not is often in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, some people have sadly deliberately let heritage buildings run down so that they are at the point of non-redemption. And that's a tragedy. And, you know, I remember a church in Mount Eden was like that, and it ultimately burnt down, but it was left to deteriorate. And actually some of the heritage buildings are churches or former churches, and they have been lost. But by and large, heritage buildings are protected against intensification. You can't bowl a heritage building. There's a protection order on it. But what the next category is what's called a special character area, and this involved about 21,000 residences around the city, and the government removed the automatic protection from those. Mm-hmm. So we have to put it back in by making it a what's called a qualifying matter. And in order to get that upheld by independent hearing commissioners and the minister, we've got to demonstrate there is a reason why these areas are exceptional and need to be protected. So our council staff, there's been a huge amount of work go into this, both partly because of COVID. We had to do some by Google search, which is a helpful instrument, but we did a lot, about half of it, just house by house on the roadways, classifying the special character areas so that what we are putting up to government that we believe will be will justify being within the government's rules is about 70% of those 21,000 houses, and as being justifying continuing protection.
So does this mean a whole, when you say, you know, an area is being put under special character protection, is that a whole street or a whole suburb or a whole block, or do you do it house by house? Because this seems to be what we've seen quite a bit of discussion about, is you've got a road maybe that's under special character protection, but there's two or three houses on it which really just don't deserve to be restored, and the land that they're sitting on could be fantastic use for high density. Is that level of nuance being looked at here, or is it broader strokes than that?
No, that will be. While we look at the houses house by house to determine whether an area, you know, should retain its special character area rating, what you don't want to see, I guess, is in a long row of, say, you know, 1900 era villas, and then somebody to put a six-storey building right up in the middle of it, because that takes away from the character of the area. So you will be trying to do something to protect the character of the area. But we acknowledge that when we went through those areas, street by street, there are some that did not merit that special character area protection, and that will be withdrawn from them. Now, there's some resistance to that. People are saying, oh, but this is my street, and often it's, you know, people that are living in a standard-style bungalow on a section with trees around them. You know, I understand why they don't want to have intensification, but the truth of the matter is we have to see intensification in our city. We're trying to do that in the areas most appropriate for it. Most appropriate because they may be the city centre. So I'm looking out my window at, you know, something that's probably about 37 stories high, the Pacifica building, and other buildings like that. That's fine. In the town centres, we've got 10 metropolitan centres. They will be able to go up high, somewhere around the city rail link stations, and say Kay Road and Mount Eden in particular. They will be and Aotea on top of the Aotea station will go up another 21 stories. All of that's suitable for intensification and along where you've got rapid transit routes. What we objected to and what the government did was they said that you can do your 3x3, that's three stories high, three houses to a section, even in areas where there isn't good public amenity, either transport or public open spaces. And we strongly objected to that. They made some changes, but they left some in. And I can go out now. In fact, we did an exercise even before the government brought this legislation in and said we've got to tighten our rules in some areas because we're seeing these bloody awful places being built which don't have good enough access, don't have a good enough light, don't have room for people to have their barbecues in an area, you know, and it could become squalid in the future because it's they're not great places to live in. And we want intensification that's quality, not intensification that just packs houses in as if they're sardines.
Okay, well, we might have to come back to this because it's a big topic. We also have to come back to having a bit of a chat about the revamp of Midtown that we're seeing. We might have to talk about that next week because we're just running a bit short on time here. But thank you very much for your conversation this morning, Mayor Phil Goff. It's always great. I hope you enjoy the short week and we'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Rachel. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank you.